Welcome to Real GM Radio. I'm Daniel LaRue, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. I wanted to do a podcast related to the New Orleans Pelicans. I actually just wrote a piece on Anthony Davis and how I think that he is what I call the golden ticket because he is the only great player that his team knows for sure that they can have him through the changeover of the CBA and all of the shenanigans with the third contract, because there aren't a lot of truly great players on rookie contracts right now. There will be some that get there, obviously. I think Drummond is one of them. Kyrie might end up getting there. I hope he does. But that is a very compelling situation, and New Orleans is in such a weird spot for this season because they are very good, but so is basically the entire Western Conference. So I wanted to talk to somebody who knows the team well, and I got Mason Ginsberg, who writes for Bourbon Street Shots. It's in the ESPN Troop Network. And it was a lot of fun talking to him. We went about 43 minutes, talked about the present, what he's looking forward to this season, the addition of Omer Asik, because that is a major factor in terms of this team, and they had a lot of defensive problems. So we talked about that, talked about how they can build for the future, what Anthony Davis is going to be, and all the other facets of this team, ownership, and everything else. So it was a lot of fun talking to him. Hope you enjoy it too. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah.
So this is a particularly interesting Pelicans team, and one of the things I felt would be a good place to start is how the defense will be different this year with primarily the addition of Omer Asik.
Yeah, it's a question we're all wondering as well. I think one of the things last season that some of us were upset with in terms of the Pelicans was there was a lack of flexibility from the coaching staff with lineups and just checking to see, especially after the injuries happened and the team fell out of the playoff race, to see what kind of stuff might work going forward. But I think the reality was that the injuries were the reason that you couldn't be flexible, because you only have so many guys who are deserving of NBA, like significant minutes in the NBA. So, you know, you want to see these lineups with Anderson and Davis or Davis at center, different things, and see how they work. But there just wasn't that kind of luxury with all the injuries the Pelicans faced. So one of the things Asik gives you that I'm looking forward to most is the ability to kind of play around with the wing positions a little more. So it's pretty obvious that the Pelicans don't have much of a true small forward on the roster that's capable of playing starters minutes. So that being said, you know, you can use a guy like Tyreke Evans on one side, or maybe go big with a guy like Ryan Anderson on the other side, two players who are not small forwards, but because you have that line of defense with Omer Asik and Anthony Davis down low, you can have that flexibility because you have the second line of these two really great rim protectors who can stop the bleeding if someone breaks the basket or gets past the first line of defense. You have that, you know, that kind of safety net, so to speak. So we did see two nights ago in the preseason, Monty played a little bit of zone defense and played Asik, Anderson, and Davis all together and played Anderson on the wing. He gives up some defense, but on the flip side, he dominated on both sides of the rebounding glass. So the key here is, I think, is flexibility. But of course, that's all predicated on the Pelicans staying healthy.
Agreed. And the other part of getting Omer and kind of completing that triumvirate with Ryan Anderson is that it's very likely that the Pelicans will be playing two guys who are good rebounders at any one time, because what makes Anderson different than most of the non-love stretch fours is that he's a good rebounder. And Asik is obviously fabulous. So not only do you have more defense, but you have a reliable rebounding base there. And if you're going to be playing small at small forward, which it seems like they'll do sometimes, that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, I totally agree. We even heard it in preseason. One of the things that Monty's been focusing in on is the rebounding of the guards. So he I think he knows what he's getting from the big men. He knows he's going to have that rebounding. But what he wants to see is the guards getting some rebounds and being able to start that break faster, which is, it's kind of counterintuitive in a sense, because you think about fast breaks and you wanting your guards to get out and run, and hopefully having Asik and Davis taking care of that. But first things first, you've got to get the rebound. And they have bigs. Apart from Asik, they have a guy like Anthony Davis, a big who can run the floor. So that's definitely an advantage as well.
Yeah, what I've found from the teams that I've covered and just from being around it is that you want to have people who have the attitude of if they're close, they can go and get it, and just basically knowing what to do. So if you're in a spot where you can't get the rebound, then you start to think about the break. And if you're in a spot to get the rebound, then you fight like hell for it. And the Pelicans have a very cool roster to do that because, as you said, they have Davis, who's a big who can run. So you can run it in different ways. If Davis is closing out on a perimeter player, because that will happen, you know, he's closing out on a four who's shooting, then maybe he'll go on the break and maybe you'll have somebody, Salmons or whoever, have somebody in there to try to get the rebound. And if you can instill that balance in your team, then you can have an effective balance between running and still getting the rebound. As you said, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, and that balance is key, and that's what's going to come with minutes together. So that's the one thing this Pelicans team didn't have last year, with or without Ašik. They didn't really have a chance to play all these minutes together. So what's been exciting for me to watch in the preseason, or not watch because I haven't had much of a chance to see these games televised, but to see that this Pelicans team is getting some minutes together. So I don't care if they win or lose. I want to see good things on the court, and I want to see them learn to develop that kind of chemistry that comes with these teams like the Memphis Grizzlies that have had their core has had years together. The San Antonio Spurs, obviously, another great example. And so I think with those minutes and just time playing as a group, the good things will come of that alone.
Do you think that we'll actually see New Orleans give meaningful minutes playing Anderson, Omer, and Anthony Davis together? Because as a basketball nerd, I think that's the most exciting possibility maybe around the league other than the Cavs.
So, I mean, I agree with you. Obviously, I'm biased towards the Pelicans, but I wrote a couple months ago over on Bourbon Street Shots about that lineup of Jrue Holiday, Tyreke Evans, and those three bigs and what it can bring. And to be honest, I didn't even touch on the aspect of zone defense, which is what Monty Williams used when he played them two nights ago. So I think seeing that and seeing that Monty's willing to make these kinds of changes to get the best players on the court, because, you know, until Eric Gordon can prove he's going to come back stronger from his injury troubles, I think that's your best five players. So I'm encouraged. Obviously, we have a very small sample size of one preseason game, but I think it's a lineup you can see deployed in certain situations, because honestly, apart from the guys like LeBron, Durant, and Carmelo, there aren't a ton of really lethal small forwards who can make you pay on a nightly basis. So it's a lineup that I think is viable against the majority of teams for stretches. And what I'm interested to see is what Monty decides to go with on a night in, night out basis in that crunch time. So I don't really care much who starts. It's all about who gets the bulk of the minutes and then who's on the floor to end games. So I would love to see that lineup can be viable on both ends of the court in a crunch time situation. But more importantly, as I stated before, Monty's got options now.
What is your best guess now, as you said, going into the season in terms of what will be that five-man closing lineup?
Based on precedent, it looks like it would be, I think, Jrue, Gordon, Tyreke, and then some combination of either maybe offense for defense, subbing Ryan Anderson for Omer Asik. That seems to be the conventional wisdom. So, you know, with the timeouts or the fouls, like I think you'd see Asik coming in on the defensive side and then Anderson subbing back in whenever he can on offense. But I think we're going to have to wait and see what happens. But I think that lineup we were discussing with Jrue, either Tyreke or Eric Gordon, depending on whether you want a guy that can attack the rim or a guy that can space the floor a little more, and then Anderson, Davis, and Ašik. I think it's a lineup that's viable in certain situations, and one I really hope that Monty can figure out how to effectively utilize.
Yeah, I definitely think that will also be a big calibration thing for just how far he's willing to go with it if he'll actually play it to close out lineups. And as you said, one of the underrated factors, people talk about how bad the shooting guard position is around the league, and that gets a lot of press, but the small forward position might actually be top heavier because it has those guys at the top, so people don't think about it because of Paul and LeBron and Kevin Durant. But you have a lot of teams, even in the West, that don't have a two-way player at that position. You think about even a team like the Warriors, Andre Iguodala is a very good player, but you don't have to kill yourself to defend him. And there are a lot of other guys like that in the West, and it'll be interesting to see if they can use that as a competitive advantage. And the other thing I wanted to ask you is, when they played a zone, what kind of zone were they playing with those guys?
I was not unable to watch the game, but I'm fairly certain it was a 3-2 so you had Davis and Ašik down low, and then the three wings across the top.
Interesting. Yeah, because I think when I was thinking about that lineup, I think you could actually run a series of different ones, because I think you could run a 2-3 with those guys, and if you wanted to, you could even run a 1-3-1 if you wanted to, because that doesn't, I mean, basically then Anderson's responsibility would be making sure somebody doesn't get wide open shots on the corner above the break, and I think he can do that. That's not too hard of a responsibility. He won't do much on the dribble penetration, but I think that's why you have the other two guys.
Right, yeah, and I mean, the real weakness for the Pelicans on the defensive side of the ball is going to be guarding the perimeter, and they struggled with it last year, and they really don't have much in the way of wings that will answer that problem this year. Just based on what these guys have done, even guys on the bench or the guys they brought in for the season like John Salmon, it's just not, they don't have a bunch of options that can really effectively both guard their perimeter and protect for the drive. So they're gonna have to figure out some ways to maneuver, and maybe these zone defenses schemes are ways to do that.
Yeah, were you surprised that the team didn't retain Al-Farouq Aminu? I wasn't surprised when it happened, but then I was really surprised considering the price that he ended up getting.
Yeah, and it's a good point, and I think that's great value for Aminu. The fact of the matter is, he just hasn't. Rick Carlisle is going to be a great coach for him. I think it's going to. I may do wonders for him, and we'll be kicking ourselves in 2 or 3 years about what to see where he's come from where he was. But he was borderline unplayable at sometimes because he just doesn't have a jump shot, and he doesn't outside of 5 feet. You don't have to guard him. His defense at this point is a little overrated. He's a great athlete, and he's got great wingspan, but he looks a little lost at times, and so I think. But I think that's what coaching can help with, especially a guy like Rick Carlisle. So obviously rebounding 2 years ago, he shattered the rest of the league in terms of small forward rebound rate. And he was great last year too. So he really does bring that elite level rebounding for his position. And he's a guy I think you can deploy as a small ball four as well. And it kind of hides his shooting a little more, but ultimately I think they just, he wasn't worth the price that they were paying him. And I was surprised to see him get pretty much a league minimum contract, but it's a great pickup for Dallas at that price.
Yeah, and the other component of it, considering they spent the resources to get Omer Sheik, is that I don't think you could have played the two of them together because it would have just murdered their offense, because I just don't know how a team would have any trouble defending a team if you have those two guys on the floor who you basically don't need to body up at all, and then Anthony Davis is out there as well. The other thing I've been thinking about with them is, considering Davis has uncommonly good ball handling for a guy his size, do you think that the Pelicans will try at all to use him not as the guy setting the pick, but as the guy handling the ball in pick and rolls this year?
It's an intriguing thought, and it's something that I think they have to at least consider. When you have a guy like Anthony Davis, you've got to use his versatility as best you can. I'm not sure how much we've seen of it so far, but and I know that Monty Williams knows that he can grow and become much more than he is, but it's a one step at a time sort of approach, I think. But that being said, there's a lot of opportunity there. I think he likes to have the ball in Jrue Holiday and Tyreke Evans' hands predominantly, but like you said, I mean, Anthony Davis was a guard in high school, and he had a huge growth spurt and shot up and became what he is now. So it's another option. And yeah, I do, going back to your point about Al-Farouq Aminu, we called it last season the unholy trinity of Aminu, Tyreke Evans, and Greg Steenstra on the court together, just destroying all floor spacing. And it was brutal to watch. And it's a miracle that Greg Steenstra isn't on the roster anymore to kind of eat up those minutes. And I know Asik isn't the best shooter, but you know, he at least he can handle himself inside, and it's going to be a lot more aesthetically pleasing to watch this new team on the court.
Well, yeah, it'd be hard to be much worse than some of those lineups. And the other point before we get into, I'd like to do an extended Anthony Davis thing that I'm really intrigued by, is the way that they structured the protection on the pick to Houston is that they retain the pick. New Orleans retains the pick if it's in the top three or if it's from 20 to 30. So the hard thing about that is, I think that it's just so much more likely that it falls within the range that it's going to Houston. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing, because then the obligation is extinguished and that opens up some possibilities. But what would you say the chances are that they finish either from 20 to 30 or 1 to 3?
I don't see the 1 to 3 happening. I mean, I have to withhold judgment on that until we find out what happens with the lottery reform. Obviously, it got shot down today, but that doesn't mean that they could make some minor adjustments and kick something in before the next lottery occurs. But I think it's more likely that they're in the 20 to 30 range. And when I say 20 to 30, I mean maybe 20, 21, 22, somewhere along those lines. Because, I mean, I do agree with you that over the most likely scenario is that pick goes to Houston. But at the same time, I think this Pelicans team is kind of they've realized that what I think many teams look at the glass half full when it comes to the draft, but the fact of the matter is that past those top 3 to 5 picks, it's largely kind of a crapshoot. So the Pelicans protected that pick top three, so they, you know, if all hell breaks loose and the same thing happens with injuries again and they end up in the lottery, they want a shot to really nab a guy that who can be a real difference maker. But apart from that, you know, they added an impact player into Seek who's going to help them now. And I'm sure they hope to re-sign him to a longer-term contract after this season. That being said, I think they're okay with the price that they paid, because, you know, it's hard to really a lot of teams have trouble kind of gauging these college players and what kind of value they'll bring to a team in the middle of the first round.
And Austin Rivers, sadly enough, is a pretty good example of that. He's somebody that I was very high on, and as of now, things haven't worked. What do you think he can do to make himself at least into a reliable rotation player in the league?
It's a great question, and I think he's done some things that not many other people around the league have noticed, but no, that's understandable because he really, overall, he's been a disappointment. But that being said, his on-ball defense, his defense overall, I think is above average at this point. He's proven himself to be at least a solid defender, and I think he can continue to improve there because he really is a very hard worker. Ball handling is getting better. He has always been able to attack the rim very well. The problem there is free throws, and that's one of the main things I'm looking at within this year is if you're a shooting guard and you're shooting 65% or worse from the line, which is what Rivers has done through his first two seasons, it's really hard to stomach. So I think he's got to improve his free throw shooting there. And he's also, his perimeter shooting, ironically enough, even though his free throws have kind of lagged behind, his spot up 3-point percentage last year was actually very strong. So he has room to improve, and he has improved in some areas. So I think he will get a chance this year because of, I mean, the big weakness for the Pelicans is their very significant lack of depth. So he's going to get another shot this year, and we'll see how it goes.
And I think part of the challenge with him was really identifying that he was a secondary ball handler, an off-the-ball player, as opposed to being a guy who can run the offense. And I feel like he's actually has some advantages there because he has a pretty good handle if you're thinking about a guy as a secondary, but if you're dealing with point guards who have to deal with all the amazing players that play that position, I think that becomes more of a competitive advantage for him.
Yeah, I do agree with that, and I think it's tough to gauge exactly what situations he's going to play this season because ideally, if, you know, a knock on wood, if the Pelicans will be able to stay healthy this season, you have your top six guys, Holiday, Evans, Gordon, Anderson, Davis, and Asik, eating up 200 of the 240 available minutes for the Pelicans. So you've got these 40 leftover minutes for these guys like Rivers and Jimmer Fredette and Alexia Ginsa and John Salmons, these kinds of players to kind of fill in the gaps. But injuries do happen, and as we in New Orleans well know. So what role he's going to play this year is remains to be seen kind of based on how the season shakes out. But I do agree, as a secondary ball handler, you can do a lot worse than what Rivers brings to the table. And I know now he played the first 2 years. They were trying to, at least especially last year, they tried to give him some point guard minutes. So he at least got some familiarity with the position. Even if he's not a great ball distributor, he got some experience in that regard. So, and I think that will help him going forward too.
Yeah, definitely agreed. In terms of Anthony Davis, I think that the best place to start, as somebody who's watched a lot of him, he is unquestionably a great player right now. I think that he's at that level. I've had trouble explaining to people how and why he is great. I want to give you the first crack at it. Because he is a great player. I think you can look at the stats, you can watch him play, but he's a very unusual great player because he's not a dominant defender yet. He's not really a dominant scorer. He's just a really good basketball player.
Yeah, and I think kind of what I alluded to before is a good place to start in the fact that Anthony Davis was a guard in high school, and then he had this impressive growth spurt and suddenly shot up, and now he's a super athletic big man with crazy wingspan. And so I think especially even his 1 year in Kentucky, he was still growing into what he became, and he's continued to grow and surpass all expectations. And it's really – I've yet to find something that he can't do well. So he had some trouble on-ball defense last year, but his help defense is phenomenal. With Asik there, he may lead the league in blocks again. I would bet on him over anyone else at this point. And his perimeter game is improving. He was working on the corner three-pointer this past offseason and I think in the preseason a little bit. So I'm not even sure the team wants him stepping out that far, but it's something to add to his game. And he can beat you in so many different ways. And to be able to do that when he's only 21 years old, there are guys who can claim to be able to beat you in multiple ways, but these guys are now hitting their primes. And he still has 5 to 6 years left until he gets to his prime age of around that 27-year-old age point. So it's a combination of how efficient he's been at such a young age and just the massive room that he still has to get better.
And age is the very important factor in that because a lot of times people think about a guy's career in terms of year one, year two, year three, but the more effective way to really think about it in terms of if you're estimating talent is to actually do it on age. And Davis has looked great, but when you look at the stats, it's even more impressive because, and I was researching it and looking at everything, wrote a piece last week for Real GM, is that you can make an argument that he had the best age 19 and the best age 20 seasons in NBA history. And while there's an age limit now, and so you don't see as many 19-year-olds in particular, it's monumentally impressive considering the guys who've gotten into the league at a young age.
Yeah, I mean, and the little things, well, not really little things, but the things that he doesn't do is equally impressive. So his turnover rate was incredibly low. It was just a little above Dirk's. And Dirk is a guy who kind of sits outside for the most part and gets a lot of his points from the perimeter. So, and Davis is someone who's he's taking shots from, you know, maybe the elbow, but he's also getting a lot of his points inside. So the tandem with him and Anderson is really amazing because they're two guys that just don't turn the ball over. And that's just an amazingly impressive, and it's an undervalued asset to have on your team is these offensive players who not only can score in a multitude of ways, but they also don't cough the ball up. It's really amazing to see.
Yeah, and having somebody who's that young, it's interesting to think about what he'll want to be, because I was there at the pre-draft interview and process, and I was talking about defense with him, and I asked him what position he said, and he's like, you know, right now I need to play power forward because I'm not big enough to bang with the centers, but when you think about what he could be eventually, he could kind of be a hybrid of all three big man positions if he wanted to be. And my hope is that he gets into a circumstance where coaches, and it could be Monty, could be whoever, understands how special he is.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more. And that's kind of where I was going with the comments last season about Monty Williams and how he was using Anthony Davis last year. And he mentioned how he didn't want Anthony Davis to get beat up inside as a center. And against some of the guys like Pekovic and those, you totally, and Dwight Howard, you get it. But there are certainly situations where he can also play the five. And on the flip side, you know, the column I wrote about the Davis, Asik, and Anderson trio, where I was kind of looking at Davis playing the three on defense and playing the four on offense and vice versa for Ryan Anderson. But, you know, a lot of people jump out at me at the fact that, well, you want Anthony Davis inside. You don't want him so far away from the rim. And I respond, usually, yes, that is true. But the fact of the matter is he's so unique and he's such a diverse player with such a diverse skill set that you have to look at each situation individually and figure out the best way to use him.
Yeah, and the other component of it is that considering his lateral quickness and everything for his size, I really want to see if he could actually just purely defend threes. I've said I had a hammer who was on the podcast, I think it was maybe Arturo Gluddy. I want to see him guard Kevin Durant. I'm not saying it'll work. I just want to know yes or no, because I think there's a possibility he could do it, and that would just change the way a lot of people think about what Anthony Davis could be.
Yeah, and I think you may see it even if it's in an unconventional style. So what if the Thunder decide to go small and have Durant playing at the four, maybe you get Davis guarding Kevin Durant for a stretch. And I think it happened at least in small stretches last year. But I don't think right now he's capable, but I agree that with his athleticism and his wingspan and just the way that he's built, I think that it's certainly a possibility. You just have to get by the people who are against it vehemently just because they know how good he is inside. And I think while that's well and good, there are, like you said before, there are circumstances where playing him on defense on the perimeter will make some sense.
And the other important part to me, the other major thing that the Pelicans have to do this season is really get it out there about how good Anthony Davis is, because now is the time that they can start to use the unique situation they have with him to recruit other people. And why I say it's unique is because I think you can make a good argument that Anthony Davis is the only truly great player who his team can say with no ambiguity, he's going to be here for the long haul. And so as all of these other high-end players hit free agency, and we know they're all going, Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, whoever you want to name, Durant, that they can say that. And so I think that they need to showcase him sooner rather than later, because if they can get in the room for a guy like Stephen Curry, if they can get in the room for Durant, that changes the dynamics of this franchise.
Yeah, it absolutely does, and especially with the new TV deal, it makes that even more true. So you always have every year, there's the people talking about, like last year was Kyrie Irving, the guys who are sure, without a doubt, going to get the 5-year max extension from their franchise, and talking about, oh, you know, he's going to opt out. It's just not going to happen. No rational mind is going to forego that kind of financial security to be able to pick, you know, where they play basketball. So it's a near certainty, if not a total certainty, that Anthony Davis is going to be with the Pelicans for the next, you know, half dozen years at least. So, you know, I totally agree. That's something they have to start looking at. And I'm sure they've got some good minds in the New Orleans Pelicans front office, Dell Demps and that crew. They're gonna get on this. And they've seen what Kevin Durant, that he's championed Oklahoma City to the extent that he has. And even if it hasn't come with a ton of success in free agency, that's kind of the path that they need to take. And I think they'll start doing that sooner rather than later.
And I like the parallel with Oklahoma City, but the other big discrepancy there is Do you feel that ownership is willing to go into the luxury tax for the Pelicans for the long term? Because I think that's what has sunk Oklahoma City over the last couple of years. Obviously, they're still great. But do you think that they can sell players on that they will spend whatever it takes to get a group together if they do?
It's a great question, and one Tom Benson really hasn't had to face yet. So I think this new TV deal hopefully will have a positive impact. Because you have to remember, Tom Benson bought this Pelicans or the Hornets team at the time for like around $325 million. I think I'm ballparking that. But which, I mean, you look at what the franchises have gone for since then, Milwaukee Bucks went for far above that price. So Tom Benson got a steal with this Hornets, now Pelicans team. And I really hope he remembers that when he looks to really expand on this franchise in the future with Anthony Davis, and really as he starts to recruit these free agents, that he remembers how much he made on this franchise, regardless, especially when this new TV deal comes to play.
And is it your expectation that he will have the team long term? Because I think some owners will consider selling, considering how high the franchise values are going to get. I think we're going to see some interesting teams go on the market just because it's an easy opportunity to just cash out and make a ton of money.
Yeah, and that's an absolutely fair point. But I think the fact that he's so entrenched in this with the city now that he owns the Saints, obviously, and now he owns the Pelicans as well. He just rebranded the team. So I don't see that as a move Tom Benson would like to make. You know, I think if he was going to do that, he wouldn't have put so much of his personal involvement in the team in the sense of a name change. So I think that Benson's going to hang on to this team for the long haul. Obviously, Benson's not a young guy, so there's a concern there. But, I mean, his family is within the ownership group, and so I don't have a lot of discomfort at this point with the ownership situation. I'm pretty confident about it for the long term.
And as kind of weird as it sounds, in some ways it can be a good thing in the long term if you have an owner that wants to win now, as long as you have the talent to do it, as long as you spend that money intelligently. And I think that what New Orleans needs to realize is that they have this unique talent in Anthony Davis, and a guy who's unusual that he will be around the city for a long time, assuming they want him, and they will. So they need to make sure that they don't spend money badly, because then they have enough space to max out a guy or two next to Davis. Because a bunch of pretty good guys is fine, but we know that elite talent is what really makes the difference in the league right now.
Yeah, and it's so true. And I think they can learn from the prior New Orleans Hornets regime, because you had such a great start there with drafting. You had drafted David West. The first 3 years of the New Orleans Hornets franchise, their tenure in New Orleans, was David West, J.R. Smith, who became Tyson Chandler in that P.J. Brown and J.R. Smith trade, and Chris Paul. And those were the first three guys, and there was your foundation. And then looking to build, there were some draft busts after that, obviously. But then you had Peja, James Posey, and Morris Peterson, in some order, those three players. And it's just, and the money they were assigned to, we got one good year out of Peja, and besides that, it just crippled the franchise. And obviously, the ownership situation was in flux, and that contributed largely to Chris Paul trying to get out of New Orleans into Los Angeles. But you can't ignore the fact that this team spent money very unwisely, and I think that it's a different group, totally different group than the people who paid those guys prior. But I think they'll still look at that and realize, and I think that's kind of what they've done here, at least to start. So, I mean, you can argue about the prices that they paid in terms of draft picks for a guy like Jrue Holiday, but what you can't argue is that they're paying these guys who are young, and they're paying guys who aren't gonna flame out because they hit the age of 30 or 31, because that's kind of what happened with James Posey, Morris Peterson, and Peja. They, you know, they paid these guys who were 29, 30, 31 years old, and gave them long-term contracts, and it's worked out just as a lot of people expected. So they gave Tyreek Evans, Jrue Holiday, these guys that are on, you know, maybe a little expensive contracts, but they're still very young and have room to grow. And I think that's kind of the theme that you saw before, and I think that's where they're going to stay. And I'm pretty optimistic in that regard.
I am too, and the other reason why 2016 is such an interesting time for them is that those guys will still be under contract, and those contracts, depending on how they structure the cap, if I'm New Orleans, I'm arguing strongly against smoothing, because if there's a big jump, I don't think there are many teams that benefit more than New Orleans, assuming they're willing to spend it. Because what happens is, Jrue and Tyreek in particular become substantially less expensive comparatively when the cap jumps, and that will give them an opportunity to add without subtracting, and that would be a very nice thing for a team that can do it. Plus, it makes those contracts, let's say you can get a guy like, let's say, Stephen Curry, who's interested, then Jrue Holiday's at a very manageable price, and you can get an asset for him if you can upgrade his position without having to give him up.
Yeah, I mean, you make a great point. When the new TV deal comes into play, would they have Jrue Holiday and Tarik Evans will be on the last years of their contracts at good value. And I think I think Tarik Evans, if I'm not mistaken, I think it declines in value every year. So I think they paid him a little more money up front, and that's a declining contract. So you have Tarik Evans, Jrue Holiday, and then Anthony Davis on his extension. And that's all that's at this point, that's all they have inked. And so Ryan Anderson comes up that year, you know, and there's the Eric Gordon situation, which will be finished with at that point. So they're in great shape, and I think in going forward, they're definitely well aware of this, and I think they'll be in a good position to recruit additional talent.
You just mentioned the Eric Gordon thing. Is the expectation that he's going to pick up his player option?
It's most likely true. There's a small chance that he opts out to try to get some sort of long-term deal, but I really do think he's going to pick up that option. It's far above his value right now. So there's some people who hope that it's not going to happen, but I think that it's going to happen. And if he decides to turn it down, then I'll be even more excited. But I feel like it would be a poor business decision for him to turn down that option.
Would your expectation be, if he did decline it, that he would go somewhere else because the money would just – he would be doing it to get something that New Orleans wouldn't be intelligent to sign him to?
I don't think he really fits with the long-term vision of this team. I mean, his defense last season was an absolute liability, which is, I don't think anyone expected him to be that bad on defense, but he was. And I just think that with Jrue Holiday and Tarik Evans, this team has the ball handlers that they want going forward at the top. So I just don't think he fits into the team's long-term plans. They don't have really the ability to give him the money that he might want, and it really wouldn't make sense considering I think this team does see Tarik and Jrue as their backcourt of the future. So I think that when this contract runs out, they'll go their separate ways.
That definitely makes sense, and also makes him an interesting piece. If a team really did believe in him, if he can rehabilitate his value in the beginning of this year, to get even something useful for him, because then you can get something that makes more sense with this roster, because as you said, it feels like he's kind of out of the core. And if you could get a small forward that's even, you know, passable, that's on a similar contract, I think that would be a more useful, functional piece for New Orleans for the next year or two.
Yeah, I mean, they've tried to trade Gordon. Obviously, as the contract shrinks, it gets easier. But I'm not sure there'll be any takers for him unless he really gets out of the gates to a very hot start to start this season. I think that's something that's always going to be on the table, no matter how well Gordon's playing. I don't think there'll be any second thoughts, oh, maybe we should keep him. I think if he bursts out of the gate and plays very well, then I think that's something that they have to consider. And they'll definitely look to move Gordon in the first chance they get. If they can get some, you know, either whether it's fair value in the sense of a player return, or just as long as they're not taking on long-term financial long-term contracts, I think that's something that they're going to consider very strongly.
Yeah, and the other Pelicans issue that I wanted to talk about is where you see them fitting in this obviously stacked Western Conference, because it's just such a hard thing to sort out. And I think to a point, it's more you just put them in order and just we'll see who gets hurt.
Oh, that's pretty much my feelings as well. So I do think that there's a top three for me, and I think even with the Durant injury, I think that the Spurs, the Thunder, and the Clippers are going to be the top three teams in that conference. But after that, I think exactly what you said. I think any injury can tip the scales. Because, I mean, I look at the Pelicans as a team that if they stay completely healthy, they're one of the top eight teams in the Western Conference in my mind. But that being said, they're in a similar situation to Portland where their depth is not very strong. So, I mean, you look at the Portland Trailblazers last season, four of their five players didn't miss a single game. LaMarcus Aldridge played in between 65 and 70, I believe. So they're the lucky healthy team, so to speak, because before the season started, no one projected them to have close to 50 wins. You know, they were a fringe team and they didn't get hurt, and so they played very well. And so I think if you have that kind of situation with the roles flipped of Portland having the injury troubles and the Pelicans staying healthy, the Pelicans are the team in the playoffs. So I think if there's one team to drop out of that top eight, I think it is Portland, because the lack of the depth and the uncharacteristically healthy season last year. But apart from that, you know, it is very tough to see there's no obvious team to drop out of the playoff race. So it's just going to come down to who can stay the healthiest, I believe.
Yeah, I agree pretty fully. I think in pure talent, I think that the Pelicans are in the probably 8, 9, 10 range. I haven't really listed it out yet because I don't always think of it in that way. And it'll be luck of the draw. I think that we know that there will be at least one team that falls out because of it, and I would guess that there will be two because of how strong it's going to be. We saw that with Memphis last year. Memphis was a good team, but they nearly got knocked out just because they lost Marc Gasol for so long. And I think you're right on Portland, because Portland, I believe it was 13 games total missed due to injury from their starting lineup. So that would put LaMarcus at 69, which is within the range you said. And it's such a weird thing. And the other part of it is, it's really frustrating that there isn't a top 16 format, because the Pelicans would almost definitely have a better chance under that format.
Yeah, and it's tough, but it's something you just have to get used to in the Western Conference. And you look further down, Phoenix is going to be good again this year. They added Isaiah Thomas. They lost Jhené Frey. I think that'll hurt. And Denver, if they get Gallinari back healthy, that's another team that could make a push to the playoffs. So not only is it tough to pick a team that dropped out of the top eight, there are teams that, like New Orleans, missed the playoffs last year, but have a really, really strong shot to make it this year. So it's tough to stomach, but it's just the life.
It is, and because of that, I think that one of the challenges with teams in the Western Conference is defining success. How would you define success for New Orleans this season?
I think how I define it and how management would define it may be two separate issues, because I think Tom Benson and the ownership group, I think they really want to make the playoffs this year. But, on a personal level, while I would love to see this team in the playoffs, I want to see this team play together. I just want to see injuries not decimate the roster. I want to see what the guys that are on the Pelicans have at the top of their roster right now, what they can do if they can spend the majority of the season healthy. And if it's not playoff caliber, then you need to make some changes. So continuity and health is just what I'm looking for this year. And obviously to watch Anthony Davis take his game to yet another level.
That makes a lot of sense. And the other weird thing that I would say to find success for this team is something that won't happen during that league year, but it's Omer being on the team a year later, because otherwise that makes the sacrifice a lot bigger. And I think that he could be a wonderful piece in this core, assuming they can retain him.
Yeah, and I think they have every intention on doing so. And I think Omer Asik likes the fact that he's a starter here, and he didn't get thrown under the bus for Dwight Howard, and I think they will look to re-sign him. And what his contract situation is going to be very interesting, because he's one of those guys where you just don't know with the TV deal coming into place, what is Asik going to do? So his value may be overinflated. For one season because of the salary cap inflation. So it's going to be interesting to see what goes on, and maybe New Orleans pays. I'm not sure what his value is going to be next season for a guy who doesn't bring you much on offense, but is one of the top three or four elite defensive centers in the NBA.
And you hit on the two big things that I think are really important with that negotiation. One is that he's got to be happier with his role, because he'll get the minutes and he'll get the starting slot. And I think both of those seem like they matter to him, considering all the drama that happened last year. And depending on how, we still don't know how they're going to structure the cap, it's possible that he might get below what will become the new market value because he's hitting free agency a year early. We don't know. They might try to, you know, do some stuff to try to raise it a little bit more next year to make it so 2016 isn't so crazy. But there is a possibility that even getting him market value in 2015 could be substantially different than what he would have gotten if he was a free agent in 2016, and that could be very helpful to them.
Yeah, it's a very confusing situation overall, especially when you look at these guys who are going to hit restricted free agency, a guy like Kawhi Leonard. So it's a mess with those guys too, but especially with a Asik. I think, like you said, if they can lock him in, if the Pelicans, if Eric Gordon for some reason opts out and then the Pelicans get a Asik at a below market rate, then the sky's the limit for this franchise. So I don't think that, like I said, I don't think Eric Gordon's going to opt out, but I do think there's a decent chance that, Omer Asik, why wouldn't you love playing with a guy like Anthony Davis? So I think they have a very good chance to retain him, and I do understand the notion that, yeah, if they can keep him, it makes the trade much more palatable. So I think that this Davis-Asik combo can be a very reputable force in the Western Conference going forward.
I know that this happens to me, but you're closer to it. Do you ever catch yourself thinking what it would have been like if they had kept Nerlens Noel?
The thing I find myself wondering more frequently than that is, what if they had the 10th pick in the draft that they got Austin Rivers instead of that? What if they had the 9th pick and got Andre Drummond? That's the fun what if scenario I like to play. I don't want to think about. I like the Jrue Holiday. I like the addition that we made for him. I like the not rolling the dice in the draft. And if you know that you're not a good drafting team, which the New Orleans Hornets/Pelicans, they haven't been a good drafting team recently. So I'm okay with trading those picks for proven young talent in return. So I like to daydream about the Anthony Davis, Andre Drummond possible combination had the Pelicans had the 9th pick instead of the 10th.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate for New Orleans that they can't recruit, because they were FIBA teammates, that it looks like Drummond will be in a similar situation to Davis, where it's going to take a lot to get him out because, yeah, that would be an unbelievable front line in terms of the like just the age and the talent of those two players.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, I mean, what Drummond lacks in his free throw shooting ability, he makes up for in every single other area of the game so far. So I enjoy watching him play. And I think Detroit's my dark horse Eastern Conference playoff team this year, and Drummond's a big part of that.
The other question, because you're much more familiar with Davis than I am, is what do you consider the ideal player? And we'll take, you know, LeBron and Durant out of it, any guys who won MVP. What do you think is the most logical complementary piece? Is it a point guard so they can run pick and roll? Is it a center like Omer so he has a protection on defense? What is the most important piece to maximize him?
It's a great question, and I'm not sure if there's one right answer at this point, mostly because of some of the things we've talked about earlier. We don't really know exactly what he is going to be when all is said and done, when he hits that age of 24 or 25, and all of his skill set is pretty close to fully developed. But I think Asik is a great start, and he's one of the top answers. You know, I was one of the advocates for giving Davis a bunch of minutes at center with Ryan Anderson and seeing the offensive firepower. But the fact of the matter is Davis is going to be one of, if not the best, help defender down low in the NBA this year. And he probably will lead the league in blocks just as a guy playing great help defense next to such a rock solid force in the middle as Omer Asik. So I don't know the perfect answer, but I don't think we can know the perfect answer quite yet in Davis's career. But Asik is one of the optimal guys, at least on the defensive side. On the offensive side, you know, if you're playing someone like Asik and you're playing someone like Tyreke Evans, it's great to have another floor spacer. So someone, a 3-and-D type small forward, while not speaking the ideal player, but the ideal skill set to add would be a 3-and-D type small forward. No names come to mind obviously Kawhi is a prototypical guy they're looking at now in terms of a young guy who can stretch the floor and really give you great defense. But you know, I think that's the one piece that they're missing from that small forward position. But like I said, it has yet to be determined exactly what Anthony Davis will ultimately be. And I think once we figure that out, we'll know. And I trust the front office to figure that out.
Yeah, and they'll definitely have plenty of time in terms of assessing what Anthony Davis and also what he wants to be. I think that's another important part of it that people don't always think about. With LeBron, he didn't become a post player until he wanted to become a post player. That wasn't Miami that did it. That was him doing it. And so they'll have to involve Anthony in the conversation because his vision of what he wants to be as a player is incredibly important as well.
Yeah, it really is, and I think that's one of the things that many of us lost. And let's play Anthony Davis at center, and what if he doesn't want to play center? And I think that's what came out this preseason. I think it was a different Pelicans player. I can't remember who it was, but said that Davis doesn't really like playing center, and maybe that changes in a couple of years if he continues to add a little bit of strength. Not a bunch of bulk. I don't think you want Davis going over a certain weight so he can maintain his athleticism and flexibility, but. You know, he will continue to get stronger, and maybe as he gets stronger, he doesn't mind playing center as much. So you're absolutely right, though. It's going to depend a lot on what he wants to do as a player and how he sees himself in the league.
Yeah, any other things you want to hit on the Pelicans or anything else?
I think we touched on a lot. You know, we haven't really talked about Jrue Holiday too much, apart from the trade chatter. But I think, you know, he's one of those guys that had some injury troubles as well last year, but I think Drew's one of those guys that's really going to come and surprise some people this year. I think he fits very well with this Pelicans team. I think his defense has been a little bit undervalued at the point of attack. And I think the fact that he can play both point guard and defend on the wing with that length that he brings is going to be something that really helps the Pelicans defensively this year.
Yeah, and he's a very good defensive player, and he has really good instincts. The only other thing I want to mention is that I'm really hoping that we get to see a little bit of Tyreke playing with Jimmer, because I think Jimmer shouldn't be running an offense, but if you have him as the secondary guy and just wide-open jump shooter, that could be a really nice role for him for the times that Tyreke is playing with the second unit.
Yeah, it makes sense, and I'm pretty sure they play a little bit together in Sacramento, so maybe there's some a little bit of chemistry that still exists there. But yeah, I mean, we hope that Jimmer can fulfill the void that Anthony Mora left last year, and obviously he lacks NBA level ability in certain areas, but he can sure shoot the ball. So if you can deploy him in the right situations with the second unit and really take a lot of pressure off him, just ask him to knock down some shots, I think he can be very helpful there.
Yeah, definitely agreed. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Mason Ginsberg for taking the time to come on. You can read him at bourbonstreetshots.com, which is in the ESPN True Hoop Network. You can also follow him on Twitter at MasonGinsberg. was a lot of fun having him on. The Pelicans are a particularly interesting situation because they have so much young talent, but they also need to establish themselves because Omer is going to be a free agent very soon. Also, I looked up after we recorded it, and the NBA pronunciation guide has it as Omer Asik, and so that's going to be hopefully how I pronounce it from here on out. Apologies to Omer and his family for consistently mispronouncing it on my end. So we're getting close to the regular season. I'm hoping to do at least one more preseason podcast. We'll see how it works out. I mean, the work that I did with Arturo Gaudi is definitely more than enough, but it's kind of fun to talk to people before it starts because then we don't know anything, and in some ways it's more fun to talk then. But as always, if you have any contributions, positive, negative, whatever, I will read it, I will respond. You can email daniel.larue@realgm.com, or you can hit me up on Twitter, @DannyLaRue, DannyLaRoux. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. I appreciate it. Take care, and make it a great day.